All right, so we've got two awesome guys doing this first workshop this morning called Growing Pains. I'm going to turn it over to Jack first to introduce our first half.
I'm Jack Matic.
What?
I don't know, I met this guy a few years ago and I remember meeting him at a group and like I was like, fuck, this guy's a douchebag from California. He had his hair slicked back and like I remember getting a call with the guy we were with working and he got out of jail. He started working with us and like I've watched this motherfucker grow and blossom into a cute little chicklet. I don't know, like he inspires me in a lot of things and like I'm truly glad to call him a friend and like he's become one of my best friends. And hopefully he can get unnervous and share some shit. So AJ.
Thank you.
Thanks for that cute introduction. My name's AJ. I'm an addict. Yeah, I really get nervous doing this stuff. I remember when I was asked to speak here, it was after me sharing at Beefy Wieners at the men's fundraiser. And I remember in the beginning of my share there, I said, yeah, Beefy Wieners. I remember I started it off with saying how much I hated speaking in front of people, and right afterwards they came and asked me to speak here, and I was like, didn't you hear what I said? You know, but one thing I was taught when I got clean was that I don't say no. You know, when I'm asked to be of service, I be of service. So so Growing Pains, I've never read that part in the Living Clean book till about 10 minutes ago. I think I've been through some, you know. So when I got clean, I had a lot of damage, you know. I had a lot of guilt and shame, like I'm sure I'm not the only one. You know, there's a lot of harm that I've done and a lot of damage that I've done to myself. And some of that is like how I treated my loved ones, you know? Like, I treated my loved ones the worst, you know? I was very aggressive, abusive, and, you know, I put the people that I loved the most through hell. And, you know, my mom, she's really sick with COPD, and I didn't go see her for a year. You know, before I moved from San Diego to Arkansas. So when I got clean, a lot of that stuff just poured in, you know, because I wasn't using my main coping skill, which was getting loaded, you know. So with that, it was rough, you know, but I took suggestions and dove into this program, you know. I attempted to do 90 and 90. I did like 87. I did multiple meetings in days before, so I thought that counted, but it didn't, I guess. So I got cut short on that. But and also, I wrote a couple notes on my hand because I'm just terrified up here. So yeah, thank you. So with feeling guilt and shame. You know, coming in here and hearing what other people had to say and realizing that I wasn't the only one really helped, you know. And another part was working steps. When I started working steps and getting all the stuff from my past that I've done, my darkest secrets, stuff that I thought my sponsor was going to kick me out of his house for, and he just looked and laughed, you know, because he's been through some of the same stuff, it really made me feel better. And that part of the growth was really important, you know. Not thinking that I'm the only one that has done a lot of the things that I have done, you know. Just and I'm starting to lose it. Another part was like just leaving old people, places, and things. You know, I have a lot of friends that I grew up with. You know, I feel I'm fortunate to have had the same friends since elementary school, and a lot of them are still using. You know, so cutting them off, well, kind of loving them from a distance. You know, they see the path that I'm on, and my hope is that, you know, that whenever they're sick and tired and they're finally done, you know, that that hopefully they'll reach out to me. One of the biggest parts whenever I was sitting there thinking about what the hell I was going to say up here was, so like a few months ago, my wife came home from her tradition study, and she was like, you know what, babe? She's like, I'm going to tell my sponsor. And I was like, what? And she's like, about our relapse. And I was like, oh, shit. And I was like, all right, I'm not going to get in the way of you and your growth. I was like, but don't fucking say a word about me. You know, I'm going to ride this one out. Because when we had about 4 months clean, I found out some information that I felt like I couldn't handle without getting loaded. And we got loaded for a weekend while everybody was at Beaver Roundup. We stayed home and got high. And I was going to take that to the grave, you know? And I didn't tell anybody. I kept up with my clean time, or my supposed clean date, which was a lie. And when I had, you know, I've 3 years clean. My actual clean date is June 26, 2022. So I rode that shit out for 3 years. You know, thank you. I rode that for 3 years. And there's a weird part of me that I'm able to like stuff away and not think about it. And yeah, so when she brought that up, I was like, oh shit. And the thing is her sponsor is my boss. And so I was like, yeah, just don't mention me. And when I was driving to work that the next morning, after she already told her, I was playing all this stuff through my head. And I was like, I'm not going to sit there and have her say, oh, hey, so what about, you know, she told me last night. And I'd be like, damn, that's a shame, huh? You know, like, I can't believe she lied to us all for so long, you know? I couldn't get myself to do that, you know? So I went in there, and it kicked off just like I was thinking about it. She's like, so what do you think, how do you feel about that? And I was like, I got high too, you know? And that, the weight lifted off my shoulders was fucking crazy, you know? I felt like I was at a block in my recovery, that I was kind of stagnant, or I was stagnant. You know, I was still repeating the same steps, going to my meetings, talking with my sponsor, but I just didn't feel like I was growing anymore. And I was stuck on a certain step, and I was just like, yeah. And then also, when I did my fourth step and it asked that question, is there anything that you're hiding? My sponsor brought that one up when I told him. And I was like, dude, you know, fucking, that was just one of those things I was ashamed of, you know, and I, like, my ego was involved in it. And I don't know. But once I told my boss, and then she's like, you need to call your sponsor. So I called my sponsor, and he was like, what the fuck? You know, so he told me to share that in the next three meetings that I went to. You know, just sit there and say, hey, my name's AJ, I'm an addict. My actual clean date is this. And I didn't get it at first. Why? I thought he was like just trying to humiliate me. But I felt more growth, you know, and the acceptance, or like how people treated me afterwards, was awesome. You know, I was just treated with love. I got a bunch of hugs. Some people came up and said, you know, that they've done the same thing. You know what I mean? And it made me feel good. And from that point, I was able to knock out that step that I was stuck on, you know? with steps, you know, I'm a slow step taker, and I thought that the best way to get going on my steps was to join another step study and start another set of steps with a group of men. And that's just it didn't play out how I had it in my head, you know, but I'm still doing it. So I'm fucking terrified. You know, dealing with things and not using my main coping skill has been a journey. You know, I remember when my nephew died from a fentanyl overdose, and I immediately wanted to get loaded, you know, and I chose not to. I mean, I was in county jail when that happened, when I first got clean, and there was drugs around, but at that point I had reached such a rock bottom that that I didn't want to go back to that way of life. Sorry, I'm looking at my notes. I'm done with my notes. So I should have wrote more, you know what I mean? I don't know. Without my higher power and Narcotics Anonymous, I wouldn't be standing up here today. I know that for sure. Things got dark when I lived in San Diego, and moving out here, they got a lot darker because I didn't have the people to sit there and just co-sign my bullshit, take my kids whenever I was too messed up, you know what I mean? And I believe that it was the right move, and exactly where my higher power wanted me to be was moving here to Arkansas. One of the other things I've had to deal with and I continue dealing with is the effect that my using had on my kids. You know, my oldest son, he always brings it up, man, you moved us out here to fucking Arkansas, all of our family is in San Diego, you know, and you know, the pain that I've caused, you know, my youngest son, he's 7, he was 2 when we moved out here. He doesn't really, that I could tell, he doesn't really remember much. But my oldest son, he's 16, he definitely does. You know, whenever he's throwing his temper tantrums, he lets me know it, you know. He'll bring up stuff from the past, and, you know, I gotta let him let it out, you know what I mean? He'll sit there and, because I put him through hell, you know. He's witnessed me be abusive towards his mother. He's got dragged around, getting kicked out of house after house after house when we moved out here, going to different schools. Just, he's been through a lot. And for me, I have this program to deal with all that stuff. You know, I have the solution that Narcotics Anonymous offers. You know, I get to talk about things in meetings, with my sponsor, with just, you know, my support group, and he doesn't have that. You know, so I tried to look for outside help for him recently, and I hope that works. But that's probably one of the biggest things that I'm shameful of, you know, and that I get to work through all the time, you know, because like I've heard one of my friends say, for him, like, bringing up my past is like breaking into a house that I don't live in anymore. You know, it's not gonna, I've worked through that, and it doesn't have anything to do with me anymore. Or that's not, it does, but I'm not that same person anymore. You know what I mean? And the best I could do is just sit there and be there for him, you know? And Narcotics Anonymous has taught me that. So, I don't know. I hope I made sense, and I don't know how much time I have left. I hate you. You know, so I don't know. I'm grateful to be here. Like I said, probably a couple times, this is like one of the things that terrifies me. I could speak to a small group of people. I could sit there and talk your ear off, you know, one-on-one. But when it comes to standing, especially with the podium, there's something about a podium. Like, I mean, at least I have somewhere to put my hands, because it's like Talladega Nights. But you know, I don't know what to do with my hands, but I'm grateful for this because it allows me to grow, you know. And I think that's what they had in mind whenever they asked me, because I told them I was freaked out, and they're like, you'll do like perfect, you know. So I don't know. I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful that you guys asked me to share, and my name's AJ Amanetti.
My name is Ben. I'm an addict. So the next guy that's coming up here to share, I was going through an issue with my sponsor. The first man I worked all 12 steps with, he had a motorcycle wreck, and afterwards ended up going through a series of relapses, and he's since passed away, cancer. When he was going through all of that stuff, I was feeling really lost because he was like my dad out here. My parents lived in California, and I confided in this man a lot, and so it was a lot of really weird things going on inside. And I had finally made the decision that I needed to get a different sponsor, and I had like two names rolling around in my head, and then at 5:30 in the morning while I was at work, I got a text message from this guy, and it was an excerpt out, like a just for a day, like a devotional kind of thing about recovery, out of nowhere. Like I hadn't been expecting it. Like it wasn't like I asked for it or anything. And I was like, okay, all right, dude. And so I reached out to him and I asked him to sponsor me. And we've been rocking and rolling in this thing, man. He's been a huge help in my life, and I think that as much as he's been there through a lot of my growing pains, I've been able to still be there for him during some of his too. His story before I got into his life and started having him speak into mine was something that attracted me to him. He raised four boys on his own right after getting clean, and plenty of growing pains there to talk about. So this is Steve H. from Oklahoma.
Hello, everyone. I'm an addict. My name is Steve. I'm not used to having a microphone. I learned to talk pretty loud when I have four boys. They didn't want to mind much. And I, too, made some notes. I may or may not go by them. Appreciate your share, AJ. That got a lot out of it too. You know, speaking is a gift that we present to each other through our fellowship, and it's a wonderful place to be back here in this room. I've been here a couple times in the years. Always enjoy being with what I like to call the. The Arkansassy type of hype that we have around here. You know, you're all are always full of a lot of energy. And the first thing I thought of is like, well, I may have to qualify a bit because I don't quite talk the way they do anymore. So I'll do just a little bit of qualifying. You know, my drug use started at 7 with the legal kind of drug, the liquid one, and progressed pretty quick by the time I was 10, injecting that legal drug. And anyway, I had done quite a few things before I was even 14 and really stopped, you know, for a long time. I wasn't really an addict, okay? By the time I was 24, I had my first DUI, and it was, suggested that, you know, I quit everything. And I was like, well, I don't have problems with all these other things, you know. So, but I was willing to do that because, you know, I had the judge breathing down my neck, and they told me, you know, it's a nudge from the judge is always a good thing. And so that was okay. But I didn't believe that the 12 steps would work, and so I committed myself to proving that they didn't by working them arduously, you know, to the best of my ability. And by the time I had 6 months and six steps under my belt, I realized, hey, I haven't thought about getting high for over a month, you know. And so at that moment, I recognized that, you know, the program works. Even if you don't admit you're an addict in the back of your head, you know, because that came back to bite me at almost 7 years, you know. So, and that started a progression of 17 years of some horrible life-altering relapses. So the first thing that happened was I did get married, and that was like a six-week problem, you know. It's like, we got to get, you know, over that, but I didn't. We had, you know, we had two boys, and she had two of my chosen sons during the marriage, so they became my family because I chose to father them, you know. And so a lot of fun raising boys, you know. Eventually she could not be around, and my I decided I needed to get clean again, and that was you know, for the kids. And it was difficult because when somebody's coming into your house and bringing dope, I found out that I have absolutely no ability to say no. So it was pretty clear I'm an addict, you know. My life got horrible, and I just stuck in it. And I said, for so many years, you know, I used to be, you know, happy, you know, when I was clean. And so I finally started making back to the meetings in 2003. Had a lot of relapses because we didn't get divorced until 2008. And so my clean date is 4/20 of 2008. I don't know how much. Did you use all the time? No?
You got like 45 minutes, you're good.
So I started coming to meetings, and, you know, for me, a lot of the problem was I just didn't believe I deserved a higher power to care for me or to, you know, to help me, you know, go through life and get clean again. You know, the first miracle happened that I actually even made it back to meetings, because I got to tell you, there's a lot of times it was close that I did not survive my addiction, okay? So I kept going to meetings, and fortunately, I lived in Tulsa at the time, and there's like, you know, there was like three or four meetings every day, and so I got, you know, two or three every day, and maybe 10 more on the weekend, because I really, really needed to be a part of this. And at first it was scary, because some of the things that I had done to myself included a severe brain burn and chemical burn in my head, and I didn't really have the ability to talk. I could hardly even listen to people for the first couple of years. But I kept showing up because I knew there was that one thing, you know. So I wanted to get clean. I wanted to try and get my life back and to be alive for my kids, you know, because there was a severe chance that wouldn't happen. So at 2 years, I got that black key tag, and I thought, oh, fuck, this is a miracle. You know, I was really, 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 really elated to find out that, you know, I could do it again. I could start to talk, and I could start to sleep more than 30 minutes in a day. So there was a lot going on the Living Clean book, you know, it talks about it. And a lot of different things to say about living beyond getting clean. First thing that happens is, as an addict, I had all of my feelings come up to the surface, And I did not know how to handle them. I mean, I just got, I got angry, I got super mad, I got super scared. I didn't have any protection from the world, you know, that I covered myself up with dope. But in this chapter, it tells us that it's hard to spot a spiritual crisis. Usually, it's described as a crisis in our relationships, finances, career, or family. And I had problems in all of those. I mean, I hadn't seen my real family in several years because I would just felt like I didn't deserve a family anymore. So I had a lot of growing to do, you know, through that. And having a sponsor was the first thing I did when I walked back in the rooms. And my sponsor, Larry, he's been my sponsor for over 20 years now, because I had 5 years of relapse coming in. I got, I don't know, 4 blue key tags in a row, you know. So relapse is a part of my story now. It's not necessary, but it'll give you a good kick in the pants to give you what you, you know, what you need to know. You know, even though you know you're an addict, you keep messing around, and that was, you know, before the divorce. So I knew I had to do that, making that sacrifice, you know, for to become more responsible for my own recovery, you know, because at that point I was still blaming it on her, you know, which could be seen as an argument, but it's, the truth is I was the one who relapsed. It wasn't her, you know. So the things about relationships that I'm going through, well, let's back up a minute. I got a lot to go. It's so funny because you come up here and it's like my home group in Tulsa has a 3-minute limit on the talk because there's like 60 or 70 people in there. And so you have a share that's like, you know, like under a minute, you know, on what's very succinct and on the topic. And then they have the 1 hour thing, which is, you know, how can you put your life into 1 hour? You know, so then they just let me ramble as much as I need to, and, you know, I get a lot of it out. Excuse me, I got cold air on my nose, so it, some habits don't go away, you know. the thing that I need to let you know is that my idea of a relationship was pretty warped. I did not trust women, you know, for a long time. And finally I met this girl who had, you know, like 8 or 9 years clean, and I was like 4 years still waiting on that 1 year that I felt like I was okay to date again, you know. Well, there's nothing better to learn to date than making mistakes, you know. And, you know, that's part of life. We have to learn to live with our mistakes. You know, having to learn to live with the problems that I had as an addict, and the problems I had as a teenager and as a child, you know, learning to live with those things and not feel bad about myself. And the steps took me through the process of learning to forgive myself and actually even not hate addiction, because there's really nothing there to hate. It's just a problem. And so I hate what it does to people, but the truth is that my life has so much fuller because I came through the steps because of my addiction. So learning to find a positive thing in life, you know, when it may seem like it's all negative, is kind of learning how to have balance in life. And we, you know, we have so many things that we can look upon and to gain an ability to continue to grow. So many times after the serenity prayer, people will say, you know, like, oh, heavy on the wisdom. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, you know, wisdom comes at a cost, and usually it's a lot of pain, you know. And the thing is that our pains are what give us strength, to grow. You know, I wouldn't have come into the program at all if I had, you know, a perfect, happy life. You know, I didn't need it if I had things that well. But I had a lot of things going on, and it was really, really important that I, you know, pursue, you know, and to prevail over my addiction in a way that was just a matter of not using, you know. So, the relationship ended kind of suddenly, all of a sudden, and I really didn't understand why. Something that I just had to deal with for quite a while, and I didn't do it real well, but I kept coming to meetings, and sometimes she would be in a meeting, and I really, really, really worked very, very hard. I wasn't willing to say anything, but I wasn't willing to walk out the door just because she showed up, you know. And that's an interesting point to think about, because if you're dating someone who's in the program, and you all come to an end, someone's feelings are going to get hurt. And if I know myself, my feelings were, you know, I felt like I had all of my nerve endings on the outside of my body. Everything hurt, you know. So I had to learn how to accept my feelings and then toughen my skin so that I didn't have to act like an asshole when I got my feelings hurt, you know. So for me, a lot of, you know, once I learned to talk, you know, it's like I would spew forth all this stuff, and it was a little bit too much for some people, so I had to learn how to pull it back a little bit, you know. And that's the thing that we, finding balance, such an important part of living this program, because we can't go full throttle and we can't run away. You know, if we're going to work, if we're going to live in the moment, we certainly have to be here and not there or there. So, you know, I think he gave me the nervous. It's a lot of fidgety, and I didn't eat any breakfast. I just had a couple of coffees and got on the road. I'll tell you a little bit about Cadillac problems. I am the one who left my wallet at home. See, I have two vests, and I love them because they have these side pockets, you know. And so I left the house with the wrong vest, and I found out when I got to the gas station, and I had to go back home, get my wallet. Because then I knew I was going to be driving fast, and the problem of not having a wallet could be really bad with the highway patrol. But my conviction to being here was the thing that motivated me, you know, because I did have some fear. I don't like, oh, what am I going to say? But and sitting there in the 10 minutes that we were before they called you up, I had like 1,000 things go through my mind. And so I just have to put it all aside and trust God that, you know, I can continue to speak with enough words to say what I'm thinking and feeling. So learning to be honest is a big deal. We can be honest in a lot of ways, and we learn that sometimes being really honest isn't really very nice. Okay, so I've learned that I need to keep my mouth shut, you know, 35-45% of the time, you know, especially about my feelings and what I think you're doing wrong, which is why the semi-trucks never hear anything that I'm saying, you know. And I'm just glad about that because, you know, it wasn't very flattering. So... So the thing about wisdom, you know, is sometimes we have to experience bad things over and over again. And so after about 4 years, this woman contacted me again and wanted to initiate another relationship. And so I'm thinking, well, okay, you know, I had gotten over the fact, you know, that she had just, you know, suddenly dumped me for not any real reason that I understood, and that was okay. It was just, you know, how she had to deal with things. I mean, she's an addict, and maybe she has some other things going on too. I don't know. Well, after 3 years, you know, things started going kind of weird again. And but I remember one thing she told me. She goes, like all of my relationships in my life just have a 3-year shelf life, you know. And so that same situation come to pass again. And so immediately, the first thing that I do is I say, okay, you don't want to trust any more women ever again. It's like, I have a dog and she loves me, and she's always loyal and faithful, and she wants to go walk every morning, but you know, it's, I can do what I have to do. I have one of my sons is still at home, and I don't have to be alone because I doubled up on the meetings. I mean, I go, I moved to Ketchum, which is near Vinita in Oklahoma, 60 miles out of Tulsa, and I go to Tulsa twice a week for my home group. I go to other little meetings around. I go to Pryor, and I go to Vinita, and I went to Wagner. So I go to other smaller towns, which I believe is a huge part and gives me a lot of really good feelings that I can take recovery to the, you know, people who only have 4 to maybe 10 people in a meeting. You know, it's a great thing. I mean, you know, I don't have to really reach real hard. You know, I mean, it's 20 or minutes or an hour, and it's always good to hear something different from other people, you know, and to reconnect. Again, you know, my belief is that the fellowship is going to get me some way to deal with whatever I have that I'm not liking about myself or about my life, you know. And so I reach out, and I've been part of many of the men's retreats that you all have here, and then some in Oklahoma. And you know, that's been a really, really good thing, you know, making connections with people who are not in my state, you know. And that's why I was so ready, you know, for a breakaway to come down here, you know. I'm really grateful that I can speak to some degree, but at my work, what I do is I varnish old boats, you know, replace wood. We restore, you know, like stuff that's like 40 or 60 years old. And they have a club that my dad makes me go to. We had a workshop, and then they asked me to come and speak with, probably a few more people than are here, to a bunch of regular people about boats. And all these people know way more than I do, you know. And then the guy who was kind of running the thing comes along and says, you know, hey, you did really good, you know. And I was like, well, thank you. I felt like I was all over the place, which that's what I do. I've got some other mental liabilities that allow me to continue to jump around a lot, you know. So on the relationships, since I mentioned my dad, I have to tell you, he's going to be 90 this year, and so there's been a real shift in our relationship, because he used to always be, you know, the steadfast and always correct and right about everything, and now he's faltering just a little bit, and he doesn't quite remember telling me some things. So here comes to play the idea of don't say everything you're thinking or everything you're feeling, because I get this from him, well, you don't trust me anymore. I was like, don't say anything, don't say anything. Because how can you, you know, when, and it's not that he's lying, but he just doesn't remember. But it still feels the same inside. So I have to learn how to deal with that a lot. You know, I mean, the feelings are great for us, but they're also, you know, going to be the death of me if I let them run my life. But I have to pay attention to them. And as a man, you know, it's like there's certain things that, you know, I might feel that I might have been taught is not right. Like don't cry or, you know, be tough and all those other things. So if I have a real feeling, I got to experience it and then I have to move on. To let it go, know that, you know, that's not all of me. To be who I am is a difficult thing sometimes. You know, because I got here, I tell you, I knew my name was Steve, and everything else was, you know, like a scratch pad that I couldn't read. Not anymore. And so I had to develop my own understanding of me through the 4th, 5th, and 6th, and even the 7th step, because I had to redevelop a personality, and I had to redevelop my set of morals. I had to really create a new person, you know, in a lot of ways. Fortunately, this person is not bad, you know. That's what I thought I was. I really thought I was bad. Is that good? That's too, wow. Well, I guess I'm doing okay. I didn't get too self-conscious about it because, you know, this is really all about me for a second or two. but I want to know that that when I when I pass on, that I've lived my life and to the best of my ability, that I've reached out and I've made other people happy, you know, in one way or another, or at least help them to progress in their own lives. So. We got to have some time for prayer, and I'll just let everyone know I'm glad to be here, and I love that you're here, and I love you all. Woo!